The Comics in the Golden Age podcast is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. For more information, visit comicspodcasts.com.
It was 1938. While war clouds loom throughout Asia and German aggression builds in Europe, Americans seek comfort and distraction. It was to become the golden age of the American comic book.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of the Comics in the Golden Age podcast. This is Chris.
And this is Mike. Many of you who are listening are probably already well aware that this is the 80th anniversary of Superman. And the character also has a number of other significant anniversaries this year. It is also the 40th anniversary of the 1978 Superman film. It is also the 30th anniversary of the syndicated Superboy show, as well as the 25th anniversary of the Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman TV show. In light of all these anniversaries, we were originally planning to do a Superman anniversary episode. But then, as you probably are also aware, a few weeks ago, we lost Margot Kidder, who is probably the most well-known actress to play Lois Lane. So at that point, we figured we'd shift gears a little, and instead, we are going to do an anniversary episode celebrating Lois Lane, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist of that great metropolitan newspaper, The Daily Planet. Lois Lane, of course, first appeared in Action Comics 1, cover dated June 1938, and she was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. I've heard her character was inspired and modeled after a number of different people over the years. One, of course, is Joanne Carter, who is apparently the model first hired by Joe Shuster, who also went on to be the wife of Jerry Siegel. Another person was Glenda Farrell, who was an actress who played a fictional reporter named Torchy Blaine in a series of films. Siegel also reportedly took her name from actress Lois Lane, and she was also influenced by the real-life journalist Nellie Bly. Now, in the 1940s, her character was originally, was traditionally very hard-nosed journalist, very competitive with Clark Kent and other reporters. And it makes sense for the time period, because she was created when this country was just starting to come out of the Great Depression. And in the next few years, this country entered World War II, where you had lots of women going back to work in factories. It wasn't unusual for them to be out of the home and working. So the way they portrayed her makes sense for the times. Now, in the 1940s, she was also given her own newspaper comic strip named Lois Lane Girl Reporter. Superman had already had a strip going back at this point in 1939, and Lois Lane was intended as sort of a supplemental ad strip to go along with it. 12 strips were originally made, and they were offered to newspapers, but not very many took them up in the offer, and no additional ones were made. By 1944, they'd all been published. But a backup comic series of the same name was started in the Superman title with issue 28 in 1944. Her popularity grew a great deal thanks to the television show, and eventually she was awarded her own comic book series in 1958. But by this time, her character had taken a step backwards in that decade. This, of course, was the era of Ozzie and Harriet, where a woman was expected to stay at home, take care of the house and kids. And in keeping with that, they sort of backtracked her a little. Her stories were sillier. Almost everything was motivated by her trying to get with Superman. She was usually subject to some sort of bizarre transformation. There was a lot of super dickery where Superman would feel like he had to teach Lois or Jimmy a lesson and play some joke on them in the end, that kind of thing. The stories were less mature than they had kind of been in the 1940s when they covered more social issues. And again, she was more of the hard-nosed journalist originally. By the 70s, she had come back and reverted closer to the original incarnation. These stories had lost their silliness, and by the time her title and Jimmy Olsen's title were folded into the Superman family book, she was played completely straight, and the stories focused on her as an investigative journalist. Her background as a son of a general, Sam Lane, was developed, and they used this to explain that she could be really talented with hand-to-hand combat and using firearms, because apparently the character had expected to have a son and was less than thrilled when he had a daughter. So he kind of raised her as a boy, at least under the standards of the era. Now, I came along, and I was introduced to the character in comic form, at least, when shortly after the John Byrne reboot. And, you know, I fell in love with Lois and Clark as a couple because of that era. But John Byrne did not portray the character particularly well, actually. The Lois Lane that he wrote was not a very likable character. But fortunately, subsequent writers like Roger Stern, Jerry Ordway, Dan Jurgens, Carl Kiesa, all the guys who worked on him in the 90s did a much better job with Lois's character. And of course, she eventually got into a romance with Clark, learned that he was Superman. And of course, the Lois and Clark show was going on at the same time, which revolved around the romance. And eventually, she and Clark got married. And that's, for me personally, why I've always preferred them as a married couple, because I kind of saw their relationship grow and develop. So I was, you know, disappointed a few years ago when DC started over with a reboot and dissolved that marriage. But I was thrilled, of course, in Rebirth about 2 years ago when they brought it back. And now, once again, they're married with a son, John, and who I really like as a character as well. And I just think DC had struggled with the Superman character a lot through the 2000s. But I think giving him a son has given him a chance to really kind of show the character at his best as he plays that fatherhood role in teaching Jonathan. And you really get to see him as an inspiration. And I think they've done a great job in the portrayal of Lois as well.
Lois Lane is one of those characters that I can't put my finger on exactly when I first found out about her. She's just always been a character that I've known about, like Batman or Superman. And in preparing for this episode, I thought about that, how strange that is that Lois Lane isn't a superhero. She isn't Superman, she isn't Batman, and yet she is a very prominent character. Lois Lane has always been shown to, or portrayed as having this presence about her. So she always stands out. She's this very strong character. And seeing the various portrayals in the cartoons, and even when I would watch Lois and Clark, which I watched because it was a Superman show, but it felt more like a show about Lois to me. But
she got first name in the title too.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But no, she's always been this very strong character, and it's so. When I was thinking about it, it just seemed odd to me that there aren't a lot of characters out there that end up being as prominent as the title characters, like a Superman or a Batman. So
yeah, well, it's interesting too, because all the other first tier characters, and I'm referring to the first tier sort of superhero characters like Spider-Man, Hulk, Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, Captain America, the ones I would argue that, you know, everyone on the street, even who doesn't read comics, would know. Although that list has probably grown the last few years. But, you know, really over the last 30, 40 years, if you ask someone, those are the first tier. None of them have a love interest as prominent as Lois. You know, Batman has had several over the years. You know, Wonder Woman has Steve Trevor, but I still don't think he's come and gone more than Lois has over the years. And I don't think it's still quite as prominent. And, of course, Spider-Man has had a couple, you know, Gwen Stacy, some people maybe you can Stacy is his true love, some Mary Jane, but still there's competing people there. And of course the Hulk has Betty, but you know, they've had a much rockier relationship over the years and have not been a couple probably at this point longer than they've actually been a couple in the comics. So Lois definitely has a greater bond than any of the others do with any of their love interests. And she was also there with issue one from the very beginning. And I don't think of any version of Superman in live action that has not had Lois as a character. I mean, she was there for the movie serial, the Adventures of Superman TV show, every Superman film. I mean, even when they brought Lana in Superman 3, and that character played by Hemingway in Superman 4, Lois was still in the films. And there's been a Superboy TV show without Lois. And of course, Smallville, she wasn't in at the beginning, but even then they brought her in later, and she ended up becoming the love interest there, probably for longer in the show's history than Lana was. So they've never made a live action Superman where Lois was not there just as well. Whereas all the other superheroes have had love interesting characters change during their different, you know, live action incarnations.
Well, and I guess that also, I mean, it speaks to her. It speaks to the character of Superman. I think that I feel that the character of Superman, that Lois Lane provides this balance to his life in a way that the other relationships like Spider-Man, Mary Jane, it's this balance that doesn't exist in other characters. Superman is trying to be human, I guess. He's trying to experience things and become whole. And I think that Lois helps make him whole. And I think that is what makes her such a prominent character, probably.
Yeah, and I've always found the periods of Superman comics I enjoy the most are the periods where he has a well-developed supporting cast. And there's other people in the show, in the comic, I mean, that get a large focus in their own storylines. And it's one of the reasons I really loved the late 1980s and early to mid 90s was the writers did a really great job of fleshing out all these other characters in the Daily Planet and Metropolis at large. And they would have their own subplots and storylines going. And, you know, eventually you had the romance between Lois and Clark develop, but it wasn't one-sided. You really got to see Lois's perspective and see her ups and downs and sort of roller coaster ride. And it's one of the things I've liked over the last few years since DC did the rebirth was, you know, giving him, you know, the marriage with Lois back in the sun and then having him, you know, other characters in the Daily Planet. They've done a better job than they've done in a long time, I think, of sort of fleshing out other characters. And I think part of that is he's such a powerful character, which is some writers complain about that. They say why it's hard to write Superman, which I always have kind of questioned, but maybe there's some truth to it because, you know, I have enjoyed the comic the most when there is a very well fleshed out supporting cast. And a large part of that is Lois, who's consistently been the most prominent member of that cast outside of Superman himself.
Yeah. And definitely the looking back at the version of Lois that always comes to mind is the strong Lois. I'm not a fan of the Lois as the damsel in distress that Superman needs to swoop in and save. And I feel that luckily, like, a majority of her existence has not been the damsel in distress, has been the stronger character.
Yeah, I do have to admit, I have a soft spot for the Superman's Girlfriend Lois Lane series from the 50s and 60s era, even though it's goofy as hell, and it is not a Lois by any means I would want to read nowadays, because they're just so ridiculous and over the top. But I have to admit, I do really like the title, just because of the craziness of it, and I am actually kind of collecting it. Eventually, like I said, by the 70s, though, she's moved back closer to what she was in the 40s, and she's portrayed as a much stronger character, thankfully. And again, that's what I want to see now. God forbid they go back to something like they did in the 50s and 60s. But nevertheless, I have to admit, just for the sheer fun of it and the bizarreness, I do still enjoy that series. Even though it's not the Lois, as I said, I'd really want to see. You mentioned earlier when you first got introduced to her, I would have to imagine time-wise, it would be reruns of the Adventures of Superman show, which would mean either Phyllis Coates or Noel Neal. God knows which one I saw first. But of course, the one that would make the biggest impact on me as a kid would be Margot Kidder, who was, of course, in the 1978 film and the subsequent one. She would be, because that's the film that really jumped out at me as a kid and made me a huge Superman fan. So I have to give Margot Kidder credit as making the biggest impact on me as a child in the role of Lois Lane. Did I ever tell you when my wife and I met Margot Kidder at a convention? Yeah, we went up to the table, and she's very polite. And, you know, she's very outspoken. She's loud. Like, she, you know, speaks her mind. And my wife is, of course, from India, and she introduced her. And Margot Kidder said, "Oh, you have a lovely name." And they talked for, like, 5 minutes about India. This back and forth where I just kind of watched. And she turned around to me, and she's like, "What's your name?" And I said, "Michael." And she just, with the loudest voice, just goes, "That's a boring name." And we, I mean, she said it in a nice way, but it was just, that's her personality. She just doesn't hold back. So we laughed, and then we talked for a few minutes. But she was super friendly and nice. And you could tell she'd be a lot of fun to hang out with. So I'm really glad we got to meet her at one point.
I went back not too long ago and watched the first one again. And yeah, I think she's amazing in the role.
Yeah, for some reason, the last 2 years, I've probably gone back and rewatched the original Superman film, like, God, at least 6 times. I don't know why, I've just been in that mood. And, well, one time I know, because they came out with that 3-hour extended cut. So, of course, I had to get that. It's worth seeing, but I have to admit there is a significant amount of it that probably could have been, was cut for the right reason. And do you know why that cut even exists like this? It wasn't like they went back and did that as a new thing. Back in the 80s when it was put on television, there was some kind of deal the Salkinds, the producers, got where the longer it aired, the more money they got. I guess it was a commercial thing. I'm not sure. So they basically went back and dug up virtually every piece of usable footage and just shoved it in the film. So that was the version of the film that aired on television in the 80s. And it's got just about everything. There are a few really cool scenes in it, though. There's a great scene. Well, spoilers for anyone who doesn't want to know, if you haven't seen it and want to. Fast forward for a few minutes. But there's a scene at the end after Superman has saved Lois and everything, and he goes back to capture Lex. And Lex is dangling Miss Textmacher over a pit. I can't remember if it's hyenas or what's in there, but something that's basically going to eat her, and he's going to drop her in there. Yeah, and Otis is looking really worried and sad. And Lex is, it's really disturbing because Lex is playing the piano and singing the whole time. But fortunately, when he drops Miss Textmacher, Superman swoops in and saves her and, you know, takes Lex away. And I thought that was a really good scene. That's one of the, there are a couple others, but that's the scene I was most happy to see put in the film again. Because even a few years ago, they did a longer version, which I like, which put back some of the scenes in the tunnel. Like when they, there's some sort of flamethrower machine and a few other moments that have been not included for years. But this one is the first time I recall that being included in any kind of DVD or Blu-ray release. And I did like that scene a lot. One thing I did want to go over for a few minutes now is, you know, Margot Kidder, while she may have been the version of Lois we first grew to love, many other actresses have played her over the years. So I wanted to take a few minutes and mention those actresses. The first one to ever voice the character of Lois Lane was, of course, in the 1940s Adventures of Superman radio show. And the first actress was Raleigh Bester. But she didn't voice her for too long before another actress, Helen Coate, came along. But then another actress came along who was named Joanne Alexander, and she actually was the longest-running voice of that radio show, and she was a woman who voiced her in the Fleischer cartoons. She also came back in the 1960s to voice Lois Lane again in the Filmation cartoon. Now, a few years later, they did the Superman movie serial in the late 40s, and there she was played by Noel Neal. They did two of those Superman serials. A few years after that, they did the first Superman film, Superman and the Mole Man. There, she was played by actress Phyllis Coates. And, of course, that movie was the sort of pilot for the Adventures of Superman TV show. In the first season of that show, Phyllis Coates returned to play the character. But then she left after the first season, and Noel Neal from the Superman movie serial came in to play the role in the television show. In the 1960s, they did a Broadway musical, It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. There she was played by Patricia Morand, who actually received a Tony Award nomination for the part. Later in 1975, they did a television production of the play, and the part was played by actress Leslie Ann Warren. Leslie Ann Warren actually auditioned to play the part in the 1978 film Later and got fairly far in the casting process. There are several DVDs where you can see her doing a screen test with Christopher Reeve in costume. In at least one incarnation of the Super Friends cartoon, she was voiced by Shannon Farnan, but I was not able to find who voiced her in her other appearances in that show. She sort of sporadically would show up here and there in all the different versions of Super Friends, and I'm really not sure and was not able to find who played her in the other episodes. And of course, as we said, in the Superman film, she was voiced by actress Margot Kidder, and in the subsequent film starring Christopher Reeve. After that came the Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman TV show, where she was played by Terry Hatcher. Following that was Superman the Animated Series, where actress Dana Delaney voiced the character. She also went on to voice the character in the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited cartoons. She also voiced the character in the Batman cartoon of the early 2000s, and she's returned in several direct-to-DVD DC animation films, including Superman Brainiac Attacks and Justice League Flashpoint Paradox. She also voiced the character in the Superman Shadow of Apocalypse video game. In the Smallville TV show, she was played by actress Erica Durance, who joined as a recurring character in Season 4, but quickly became a regular. Of course, Erica Durance is also playing Supergirl's original Kryptonian mom on the Supergirl TV show right now. It's a great thing about Superman. If you play some character in one of their incarnations, you have a job for life, because they'll keep bringing you back. And I actually like that. That's kind of nice. In the Superman Batman Public Enemies DVD, she only appeared in a cameo, and I don't believe she had a speaking role, at least none's credited. In the Justice League New Frontier DVD, she was played by Kira Sedgwick. In the Batman Brave of the Bold cartoon, there was this really great episode on an alien planet. The planet is Zurin-R, where there was sort of a society similar to ours, and all the characters kind of matched the Superman universe, even though Batman was a hero on that world. And there was a character named Vilsi Valar. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. And she was, of course, voiced by Dana Delaney. And she was kind of a mixer between... She was kind of a mix between Lois Lane and Vicki Vale. In a later episode of The Brave and Bold, Battle of the Superheroes, the actual Lois appears and is voiced by Serena Irwin. In the 2006 film Superman Returns, she was played by actress Kate Bosworth. And shortly thereafter, in the motion comic Superman Red Son, she was voiced by actress Cindy Robinson. In the 2011 animated feature All-Star Superman, she was voiced by Christina Hendricks from Mad Men. In the animated film Justice League Doom, she was voiced by Gray DeLisle. Name is spelled D-L-I-S-L-E. It's one of the DC animated films I've not actually seen, so I'm not really sure. In the animated film Superman vs. the Elite, she was voiced by Polly Perrette. In the film Superman Unbound, she was voiced by Stana Kiddick. And in the animated shorts Tales of Metropolis, she was voiced by Maria Bamford. In the Justice League Throne of Atlantis, she was voiced by Juliet Landau. And in the animated film Justice League Gods and Monsters, she was voiced by Paget Brewster. There's also several Lego films they've done. She was voiced by Gray Griffin in most of them, and in the Lego Dimensions, she was voiced by Courtney Taylor. There's also another Lego film, Batman 2 DC Superheroes, where she was voiced by Bridget Hoffman. In the current Justice League action cartoon, she is voiced by Tara Strong. And, of course, in the current run of DC films, including Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, and Justice League, she is played by actress Amy Adams. I should mention, in addition to the live action, there's been several young adult novels over the last few years put out by Switch Press and written by author Gwenda Bahn. And she has also, as a character, appeared in virtually every Superman novel put out, really since the original creation of the character. Now, I just want to mention, since we went through all these characters, I just want to mention my three favorite versions of Lois. And, of course, Margot Kidder's there. We've already mentioned that. Also, Dana Delaney. Because I just love the DC animated version of Lois Lane. And she played her for so long through three or four different cartoons that I love that I have to put her on that list. And also Phyllis Coates. Even though she only played her in the Superman vs. the Mole Man film and in the Adventures of Superman TV show for 1 year, I always really liked her portrayal of the character. It was very in keeping with how I would read the 1940s Lois Lane in my head.
You know, I think that mine would, I guess because there has been so much, so many one-offs, mine would only Margot Kidder and Dana Delaney, not as nearly as familiar with any of the other ones. And while the New Frontier, as we previously discussed, I think the New Frontier is a masterpiece, and I am a big fan of Kira Sedgwick. That wasn't really a standout film.
Oh, I can understand that. So. I mean, I love that film, and she's a great actress, but it wasn't on my list either. But like you said, there's so many friggin' actresses who played her over the years, which is also a testament to how important the character is in comics, that not very many have had that many, outside of these, you know, main superheroes themselves, like Superman and Wonder Woman and Batman, have not nearly had that many people play them in animation or live action or radio for that long.
All right, so with that, we're going to move on to the comics. The first one that I'm going to go over is the first Lois Lane Girl Reporter story. It appeared in Superman number 28 from May of 1944. The writer was Don Cameron, and the penciler was Ed Dobrotka. I was going to do this as a one of our typical panel by panel like sort of breakdowns, but this is a very short story.
Yeah, these were only like four or five pages usually. They're very short. And just to clarify, these are the backup stories of Superman titled. These are not the newspaper strips that I mentioned, even though they're of the same name. But yeah, the backups are only like four or five pages at most.
Yeah, it's. I was expecting it to be a much longer story, but it seems to very quickly get to its point. This story is referred to as the Suicidal Swain. So in it, Lois and Jimmy are in the office, and Jimmy is kind of giving Lois some grief about how she wouldn't be successful if it wasn't for Superman. So Perry ends up sending her off to cover a story about a man who is threatening to jump off of the eighth story of a building. She heads down. She sees that the cops are there trying to lure him back in through one of the windows. and finds out that he's actually he's out on the ledge because he's brokenhearted. She goes out and tries to convince him that he needs to come back in, but he won't hear anything that she's saying, and so she finally loses it and tells him that if he's going to jump to his death, then he's not really alive. So she stomps her foot down on the ledge, and when she does that, the ledge breaks away, and she ends up falling off. She, on her way down, she manages to catch an election banner and swings from that and manages to fall through a couple awnings that help stop her fall, and until she finally is caught by the police at the bottom in a net. The after all of the events, the man decides that he's not interested in ending his life, because he saw how much danger Lois was in, and Jimmy congratulates her on getting a really great story that doesn't have anything to do with Superman, and she's a little put out now because the suicidal man is now kind of interested.
Now, before we talk about these, I'm going to go ahead and cover mine, and then we can kind of go over what we thought of the Girl Reporter stories. Now, of course, again, mine is from Superman 29, and the title is The Bakery Counterfeiters. And again, it's written by Don Cameron and penciled by Ed Dobrotka. In my story, it opens with Clark Kent speaking to another reporter at the Daily Planet named Steve, who is laughing over the fact that Lois's latest assignment is to write a bake shop interview for Twip's Housewives marketing hints column while Mrs. Twip is ill. Lois isn't happy but tells Steve to go ahead and grin because someday this worm will turn. This worm, that's an odd line to use, but it's what she uses. Lois arrives at the bakery and immediately notices a couple of hoods, including Fingers Gordon, the card sharp. It actually says sharp. Isn't that shark? Shouldn't it be shark? Yeah, maybe it's a typo. And Pinball McGee, the racetrack tout. I'm not sure what they mean by tout. Maybe an old-fashioned term? I don't know racetrack stuff. So, anyway, she moves on to meet and interview the baker, Mr. Grad, who is very reluctant to do the interview. As she later goes to leave, Lois asks if she could take along a loaf of bread or something to Mrs. Twip. When she goes to reach for one of the employees screams at her to get away. She is taken aback by this, and he quickly apologizes and tells her the loaf she was about to pick up was not fresh, and he gives her a different one. She's suspicious at this point and decides to watch the store. When she sees the clerk who yelled at her sell the same loaf he wouldn't give her to another man, she follows the man down the street. She eventually gets in front of him and pretends to accidentally trip him. When he collapses, she goes to help pick up his bread, and he grabs it out of her hand. The bread package splits open, and a pile of money falls out. The baker and the clerk come running, and Lois strikes the man with a purse and calls for help. The police appear, and the three men attempt to flee. The police take down two, and Lois stops the baker by tripping him and striking him in the head with her purse. She likes to do that here. The police thank Lois for her good work, telling her Superman himself couldn't have done it any neater. Lois tells them of her suspicions about the bakery, and they go inside to discover a huge stash of cash, and the police realize that she has stumbled onto a secret lottery ring. Apparently, the doctored loaves are being used to transport cash. Back at the Daily Planet, Steve continues to tease Lois about her assignment when she arrives, but is shocked to soon discover her real scoop. Perry then tells Steve to wiggle on and cover the housewife's assignment because Lois is busy. You know, I'm going to assume that that's an early Golden Age version of Steve Lombard. Even though he wasn't created later, that's just the sort of jerk behavior that Steve would be known for in the 60s and 70s. So, again, this is Steve Lombard as far as I'm concerned.
How did you feel about these stories?
Well, they're short and they're a little silly. I do like at least I like the fact that, you know, I'm not going to say there's not an element of sexism in this. This is the assignment she's been given. But at the same time, there is a certain progressiveness because it acknowledged that it's silly for her to be getting those assignments. And clearly in each case, the whole plot is she goes off and gets some much major scoop and usually foils a crime or something. That's what most of the stories are. So if you look at it from that perspective, it's actually pretty progressive by sort of 1940 standards. So I did like that. I do like the appearance. I just love how 1940s Lois is drawn. And this is very similar to the style that Schuster started for her in the early 40s and would stay for most of the decade. And I just like that kind of look. So I enjoy the strips. They're short. They're fluffy. You know, there's a lot of sort of sexist line against Lois, but they're portrayed in a way as they're supposed to be sexist. You know, it's not – the people say them, like Steve, are supposed to be jerks. So.
Right. How did you feel about the art in these stories?
It's okay. It's crude. I really like the way Lois is portrayed, which is the most important thing. Outside of that, they do very much follow the newspaper strip format, even though these were created for the comics. These are not the same strips that appeared in the newspaper. But they did very much follow that kind of design. I mean, the story, there's not a huge amount of action in them. I mean, usually she does something like she hit a bunch of guys with her purse in my story, but there's not, you know, a huge amount for them to really shine. So it was serviceable, I would say. What about you?
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. It seemed like the many of the characters were you know, using the model sheets. It seemed like Lois and Clark Perry. Some of the other characters, like the jumper in my story, were clearly improvised for the story. So it's letting I guess Ed DeBrotka kind of do what he wanted to do. So they end up being a little more cartoonish.
I mean, it does deserve a lot of credit because the whole point is basically to support the idea that this strong woman should be out there on the front lines as a reporter, getting the same type of stories as the male reporters are, and that she's better than them in many instances, like Steve. So if for 1944, that deserves a hell of a lot of credit. And it's interesting that we would read something like this from the early to mid-40s, knowing how the character would be portrayed just 10 years later in the 1950s comics, and then later, a little after that, in her own series, Superman's Girlfriend, Lois Lane, which was much different than what we're reading here. Yeah. And I think this is a preferable version of here. Again, I love the Lois Lane series for its goofiness and just how fun and bizarre it is, but this is the Lois Lane that I fell in love with and like as a character much more than that one.
You said that you went through a couple of the strips as well.
Kind of. There's some samples online. I didn't read any full stories. I read some. I like this better, but it's hard for me to say because I didn't read enough of coherent storylines to see kind of where it was going or anything. I really just saw a handful of samples, so I'm reluctant to really glean anything. What I'm hoping is IDW is putting out these great hardcover strips of the Superman comic strip, both the, you know, dailies and the Sunday strips, and they've kind of jumped around in time because their original intention was to. Because another company, I think it was Kitchen Sink, maybe back in the 90s, did a few years. So when IDW started doing them, they wanted to start in different years. They didn't want to go back and do the same ones that have already been published. So they started off later. So what I first read of them, I have all their edition through the late 50s to the 60s. They've put out a few Sunday ones from the 1950s and 40s. I only have one or two. I'm hoping, and it may be the case in some of the ones that have already come out, and I just haven't gotten. But what I'd like to see there is for those to include the Lois Lane strips so I could get a much better idea. And I'd be really surprised if they didn't. These editions put out by them are really, really good, and I've been loving them. And it's interesting because a lot of the Superman strips will take similar storylines from the comics and just kind of adapt them to the newspaper strip. I mean, particularly in the late 50s, early 60s, when Jerry Siegel was back as a writer again, they did that with a number of his stories. You see slightly alternate universe version of stories you would see in the comic. So I would be very surprised if in some of the 1940s ones they put out, we don't get to see the Lois Lane strip included.
It's funny. I sent it to you today when we were when I was trying to look up the Lois Lane strips. I came across a series of strips by an artist, Kate Beaton. I believe they're called Lois Lane Reporter, and they deal with kind of Lois Lane being pestered by Superman, one of them has her on the phone with her mom, and Superman flies by and sticks his head in the window and asks her if she's in trouble because he saw that she was on the phone. Another one where Clark shows up at her desk and keeps kind of prodding her with this secret, this really big secret about Superman that he needs to share, until finally she just tells him, look, I have work to do, leave me alone. And I kind of appreciate that I think that's it's an interesting mix. I don't know how long it ran for. I could only track down a couple of them online, but I thought that was an interesting mix of kind of the message that these first stories, these first backup stories were trying to put out there, that, you know, she's a good reporter, she's trying to do good work, and then also the mentality of sort of the later strips, or later stories, Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane stories, where she's the more of the damsel in distress sort of character.
I do think my favorite was when she was talking to her mom, and Superman just shoved his head right in her window in her face, and she got so irritated with him.
Yeah, the very big, Lois, are you in trouble? No. I saw you were on the phone, just thought something was going on.
He just kind of slinks out the window again, and she just looks really pissed off. Yeah, this is a very self-absorbed version of Superman.
Yes, yes.
I'm actually planning, one thing I was glad when we decided to do this is when I got reminded that they had those young adult novels about Lois Lane, because my daughter is a real big reader, and she's about to turn 12 tomorrow, by the way, and she reads a lot, and she reads a lot of young adult novels, and she's read a number of involving different superhero characters, so I'm going to mention that to her, and if she gets it, I'd be really interested in hearing her opinion of what she thought. It looked like they were very well reviewed from what I saw online, and I believe there's three of them now that came over out of her few years, and, you know, to be honest, if she wants to get them, I'll probably read them too, so... Unless she has a really different opinion than the review I read, I would probably give him a shot myself, just because I'm curious. The final story we are going to cover is from Action Comics 60, and it is titled Lois Lane Superwoman. I will note that the cover to this issue is by artist Jack Burnley, and I just want to mention it because it's a great World War II era cover. It's got a bunch of soldiers fighting, and I kind of think from the background they're in the Pacific, but I don't know if it's meant to be that specific. That's just the vibe I get. And they've got like a machine gun and they're firing against the enemy. And you see Superman flying down from above and he's basically holding supplies, including medical supplies. And you could see the big Red Cross symbol on one of the boxes. And I don't know. I just thought that was, especially for a war cover, that was a fairly touching one. You know, and you see one of the soldiers looking up, pointing to Superman, clearly, you know, happy and relieved that he's coming. So I really got a kick out of the cover of this one. Now, this particular story is written by Jerry Siegel. And the art is by John Sekela. It opens with a really nice splash page with Superman strapped to a wall, and there are some sort of lasers pointed at him, and there's a large shot in the middle of the page of Lois Lane about to smash the machinery. She is wearing a blue bodysuit with no sleeves and a blue skirt, red boots, a red cape, and the Superman symbol on her chest. The opening blurb reads, "For years, Clark Kent, in his identity as Superman, has been saving Lois Lane from peril after peril. In all this time, Lois has always had to play the role of the damsel in distress. But women are unpredictable beings. Can you imagine what would happen if Lois were unexpectedly to find herself gifted with superhuman strength? You're right. Anything could happen. And if you'd like to know exactly what would occur, read on and discover for yourself in the adventure entitled Lois Lane, Superwoman." The actual story here opens with Clark Kent pretty much stalking Lois Lane on the street, insisting that she tell him once and for all whether she cares for him. Very attractive behavior there, Clark. Lois asks how she could ever care for any man when she has been associated with someone as confident, outspoken, and assertive as Superman. He insists that she isn't being fair because no man could be a rival to Superman. Why, he has no more chance of being like Superman than she has of being a superwoman. Foreshadowing. And then Lois crosses the street and is struck by a truck.
So the rest of Lois Lane in the comics is just a Jacob's ladder scenario. So
it was just kind of startling because I, you know, you could struck by a truck. There's other ways they could have knocked her out, but struck by a truck, she didn't die immediately. Not to mention Clark. Couldn't you have done something there, buddy? But, you know, anyways. She is rushed to the hospital where Clark learns that she has had a very bad brain concussion and that no one could perform the needed operation successfully except Dr. Mitchelson, who is from the nearby town of Randalltown, but who seems to have mysteriously disappeared. Shortly, Superman flies from Metropolis in search of the missing doctor. Back at the hospital, Lois mutters the word Superman, and then we see an image of a blood transfusion being performed between her and Superman. The doctor tells Lois she will be up and around in a few weeks and is surprised when she suddenly experiences an immediate recovery. The next day, Lois sits down to type, but with just a few pecks at her typewriter, she's destroyed it. Confused, she stands up and leans on her desk, which collapses under her weight. Suspecting what has happened, she lifts a large file cabinet in order to prove that she has gained superhuman strength. A group of men walk in, bewildered as to how the file cabinet was moved. She explains that she has become a superwoman with strength beyond all belief. But when she jumps into her chair at the sight of a mouse, the men only laugh at her. Disgusted, she rushes out of the building to get a taxi, but then remembers that she's gained Superman's powers and flies to her apartment. There, she fashions her own super costume. She immediately sets out to do good and hears the sounds of a fight. But when she arrives, she discovers it's merely a wife chasing her husband down with a rolling pin, angry that he's late for dinner. She calms the couple and helps them make up before flying off in search of others in need. Soon, she finds an apparent kidnapping. A group of men have grabbed some guy and put a mask over his face, dragging him away. She interrupts and quickly takes down the bad guys, only to discover their victim is Clark Kent. She flies Clark to a nearby roof to explain that she gained Superman's powers through the blood transfusion. Clark brags that he has the scoop of the century, so Lois uses her powers to fly Clark around, basically scaring the hell out of him and threatening him if he were ever to reveal her identity. He basically agrees not to. Later, Superwoman is flying over Metropolis when she gets entangled in a super-strong net. She's flown to the hidden den of the terrible Dr. Scowl, who is angry that his men mistakenly captured a woman instead of Superman. Just then, Superman bursts in, but before he can act, he is zapped by an incredibly strong bolt of electricity. The Man of Steel collapses and is strapped to the Z-Ray, where a bombardment of cosmic rays will finish him. But before Dr. Scowl can activate the machine, Superwoman awakens and destroys the device. Scowl still tries to turn it on, but ends up perishing before the frightful beam of his own death ray. Superman is left speechless at the sight of Superwoman. Then she grabs him and shouts, "For 5 long years you've led me in a dizzy chase on a romantic merry-go-round, my fine feathered friend. Well, that's all changed. I've got some superpowers of my own now, and you're going to listen to me. I'm crazy, batty, dippy, and slap happily in love with you." I'm sorry. "You great, big, wonderful man. And the point of all this romantic byplay is that I want a definite answer to one little question. Will you marry me?" At which point, Superman kind of mumbles, "Oh, that is," and she grabs him and yells, "I accept." At which point, Superman throws up his hands and says, "Well, what chance has a mere Superman got?" At that point, her super-sensitive ears detect newsboys shouting an extra, and Superman hears it as, "Lois Lane is Superwoman. Big expose by Daily Planet reporter." Which point she realizes that awful Clark Kent couldn't keep her secret. Then she feels dizzy and suddenly collapses. And then she wakes up in the hospital where she's informed that Dr. Mitchelson has saved her life. He said she's just recovered from a delicate brain operation and the doctor never would have arrived in time if it wasn't for Superman. She's disappointed to realize that everything she experienced, particularly the marriage proposal and Superman's acceptance, was all a dream. So what did you think of Lois Lane's Superwoman?
I liked the story for the most part. I was disappointed that it was a Jacob's Ladder scenario, minus that you know, he's dead. It's more of a Newhart scenario. Anyway, it was good. It was fun. Also, I you know, certain things about it that at first blush I didn't totally understand, like the fact that Superman was able to give a blood transfusion, and then the whole reveal that Clark Kent, is so scared about being flown around the city and things like that. It was interesting the way that they presented all that, and then it turned out to be a dream that she had, because she doesn't know these things about Clark and Superman, that Superman can't give a blood transfusion, Clark Kent is Superman, and so little things like that. I thought that that was kind of interesting. I also found her, that the costume that they decided to give her, I thought was actually very tasteful in the line of Superwoman, Supergirl, Power Girl costumes. Very tasteful costume. It was essentially Superman's costume minus sleeves plus gloves and a skirt. So the skirt actually goes over the
You don't see any leg like you usually do with a Supergirl or Superwoman costume.
Yeah, no. And she has a high neckline, so there's not that Power Girl missing, whatever, she's missing a symbol or whatever. So none of that going on. It was a fun story. I enjoyed it, and I like that she gets to be the strong one, and she just kind of lays it out for Superman and says, "Look, I'm proposing to you," and he's like, and she goes,
"Yeah,
that's
like
a yes."
He's like, "Oh well, what's a Superman to do?" I mean, we can't lie and say there's not definitely some sexist attitudes in this, and including just her kind of attitude towards Superman and kind of chasing him. But one of the things I liked about it is kind of a weird hint of things to come in the 50s with her character. The whole idea of her getting powers, if something bizarre happening, it's a dream, like they later have all the imaginary stories in the Superman world. So it is, and we're just still in that period where a lot of Superman stories, he's fighting non-superpowered villains, but he's also still fighting gangsters, corruption. We're still sort of in that social justice era of Superman. But we're starting to move into some of the things we're going to see grow and explode in the 50s, like the imaginary story, like Super Lois gaining powers in a story. And so I kind of like seeing that evolution of a lot of the Superman tales, and in this particular case, Lois. I did also like just sort of seeing her with the powers doing her thing, how quickly she embraced it. Like, it says a lot about Lois that, in her mind, this was all real. She got the powers. She immediately put a costume out there and went out to kick butt and save people. There was no hesitation in her mind. And I also liked, even though this is pretty awful, that when she was worried Clark was going to reveal her secret, she basically scared the hell out of him and threatened him to get him to keep quiet. It's like, you'll be sorry if you get my secret. I'm thinking, the hint is basically that, she'll rip his head off or something if he, tells her secret.
Yeah.
So that was kind of taking it up a notch.
I don't know. The stories like this are fun. I don't have any complaints about the... I mean, like you said, there is a certain amount of sexism in it. But for the most part, I enjoy the story. I thought that it was a fun story, and the art was fine. It's not my favorite period of Superman art, but
I do have to disagree a little, because I really like the 1940s Superman and the way Lois is portrayed. It's kind of what I said on the Girl Report earlier. I just like that 1940s kind of hairstyle on Lois. I like the bulky, thick Superman. So I just find that era appealing.
Yeah, that style of Superman. I'm not a huge fan of that. Really thick torso.
And I always get the sense that this Superman is not that tall. And I think that kind of goes back to when Darwin Cook did New Frontier, and he had Wonder Woman be taller than Superman and Batman. I think part of that, he did that mainly because of Wonder Woman's character and what he wanted her to be. But I also wonder how much of that may have had some influence on this Superman, because this Superman really doesn't seem like the tallest. Not that he's like short like Wolverine, but he just seems like, average height. Whereas I think Superman, as the years went on, he kind of grew a few inches and became a lot taller. And he's kind of stayed there ever since.
Did you find out what the S stands for?
Superman.
right, so I guess that'll about do it for this episode. I know, Mike, you said that we have a little housekeeping.
Yeah,
that we've
obviously been on hiatus for a while. If you follow our Twitter account, you know, you probably know a little bit about it. I actually have had a couple deaths in the family this year. Not been the best year so far. And Chris has also had quite a bit going on in his personal life, professionally and personally. So it's been a very busy sort of trying year so far. So we had to take a break from the show. We each did, you know, mini episode here and there just to kind of keep it alive. But we needed to take some time off. And we're hoping to get back onto a regular schedule. I know we had a few plans we'd announced in previous episodes. For example, the Prince Valiant, Hal Foster one. We still want to get to that. We're going to kind of be easing back into things for a bit, though. Take sort of less daunting. You know, I want that episode to be really special. So we'll kind of ease back into things again, going back to rotating between the mini episodes, the fuller episodes. But we do want to thank people for sticking with us. I've tried to keep sort of the episodes alive on social media while we've kind of been on hiatus, keep the podcast out there. So, you know, for those of you who download and listen to us, thanks for sticking around. We appreciate it. And we'll try to get back on track for you, get you some new episodes out, and get back on a regular schedule.
Yes, we really appreciate it. We really enjoy doing this. This just has not been the easiest year for us. So please continue to reach out to us through Facebook and Twitter and through our Gmail as well. That's comicsinthega@gmail.com. And feel free to rate and review us on Google Play and Apple Podcasts. So that'll do it for tonight. Thank you again, as always. This is Chris.
This is Mike.
Thanks, and have a great night.
Well.
Any more at home like you?
Not really, no.
I didn't think so.